day and welcome to the National Immigration Forum. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Ali Noorani, Executive Director of National Immigration Forum. Please go ahead.
Great. Thank you. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us today. It has been a busy first 11, 12 days of the Trump administration with respect to immigration, and we're really grateful for the time of the press on the call as well as the time of the panelists that we have with us today. On today's conversation, we will be hearing perspectives from the law enforcement community, the business community, and the faith community with respect to the executive orders that the president has signed since he was inaugurated just over a week ago. From the perspective of the National Immigration Forum, while we appreciate the attention to the nation's national security interests, we do have serious concerns about these executive orders. We are concerned that they may be putting American troops at risk, that they may be standing in the way of experts' work, whether it's at the Department of Homeland Security or elsewhere. And we urge members of Congress, Republicans and Democrats, to work together to advance constructive solutions. And in addition to engaging the administration, we look forward to engaging members of Congress in the days, weeks, and months ahead to advance such constructive solutions. Today's panel, let me introduce them across the board first, and then I will turn it over to our first speaker. Today's panel includes Chief Art Acevedo from the city of Houston in Texas, Bob Narabout, Executive Director of the Idaho Dairymen's Association, Jenny Yang, Vice President of Advocacy and Policy of World Relief, and then Galen Carey, Vice President of Government Relations for the National Association of Evangelicals. So without further ado from me, I will turn it over to Chief Acevedo from Houston to kick us off. Chief, thank you for joining us.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Thank you. Thank you for having me on. First, I think that I'm speaking not just for my role as the Chief of Police in Houston, Texas, but also the First Vice President of the Major City Chiefs Association. And I can just say that we look forward to continuing to weigh in on this conversation, but more importantly, with the new administration, we see this as an opportunity for the men and women in the front lines that represent the 800,000 police officers in this country to work with the administration on finding a proper balance between policies that hopefully will continue to protect the homeland from terrorism and criminals trying to come to this nation, but also doing it in a way that is thoughtful and that doesn't run away or abandon 241 years of American values that ultimately has created the melting pot we call the United States of America, more importantly, created in an atmosphere in this country where law enforcement on the front lines that are tasked with keeping communities safe have worked tirelessly to build relationships with all residents in our communities, whether they're immigrants or refugees, documented or undocumented. We absolutely rely on relationships of trust, respect, and engagement to keep this community safe. We hope that next week we're going to be in Washington, the Major County Sheriff's Association, the Major City Chiefs Association. I know we've reached out to the administration. And if you really think about what the president said and has been describing, to a great extent, his comments has really focused on making his immigration enforcement priorities hardened criminals, people that are undocumented and people that, when they're within the homeland, that they're actually, hardcore criminals. That very much sounds like the priority enforcement program that major city chiefs actually and other law enforcement agencies worked very closely with the last administration to craft that language and to craft that policy. And so what I'm hopeful and what we're asking for is that let's take a pause. I think what you see happen this weekend was an executive order that was rolled out without very little, if any, consultation with subject matter experts at all levels of government, one, which is always a mistake. Two, it was rolled out with zero training. And one of the things that I can tell you, when you have tens of thousands of federal agents, ICE and customs agents at these border checkpoints and at these entry points, points of entry, that when you have such a seismic shift in your policy without taking the time to develop policy, make sure it passes constitutional muster, make sure it passes the judgment of experts that have been in this field for decades, but more importantly, make sure that you've had the time to actually put out the policy, provide training on the policy, and make sure that everybody's on the same page, we end up having the chaos. Now, lastly, one of the things that really concerns us, I think, from a law enforcement perspective, is that when these orders are issued that have fundamentally tough impacts on our communities, when we have lawful permanent legal residents being detained and confusion starts taking hold and rumors start flying, it instead of enhancing public safety, actually is a detriment to public safety, and we are stuck here with the fear that it creates, trying to control that fear. And lastly, when we have these conversations as it relates to matters of immigration or refugee programs, without a doubt, we know that people are succumb to the radicalization and to hate, whether it's the street people that succumb to street gangs or to come to Islamic extremist views. It's more likely to happen when you paint anyone, any religion, any society with a broad brush, and you disenfranchise them. You really start creating an environment where someone may feel they have little hope and may actually succumb. We've got to bring people into the mainstream instead of pushing them away from the mainstream that we call the melting pot of the world, the United States of America. And I'm hopeful that as we move forward, we will be called upon as experts on public safety, on finding the appropriate balance, but just as importantly, the appropriate tone.
Thank you very much, Chief. Thank you. Thank you very much for everything that you do in Houston and also with at a national level as well. Our next speaker is Bob Darabout, Executive Director of the Idaho Dairymen Association, speaking to the great work of the business community in the state of Idaho when it has come to welcoming and helping refugees resettle. Bob.
Thank you, Ali, and thank you for everyone who's on the phone. I appreciate this opportunity. Appreciate it from a couple different reasons. One is obviously we always enjoy showcasing Idaho. So as you try and envision Idaho, you need to envision a state when you add dairy and beef cattle. We have more animals than what we have people. So it's a unique state. One of those states where you wouldn't think necessarily that refugee resettlement would be a target state for that, but it is. And in the community that I am from and where my offices are located, it has a population of about 45,000. And it has it's Twin Falls, Idaho, and it has a refugee center there in Twin Falls, Idaho. It's been there for numerous years. And roughly resettles about 300 to 350 refugees on an annual basis. Uniquely, many of the concerns swim around the security concerns that the chief was trying to address. Many of the concerns around refugees is their drain, shall we say, on the economy and drain on government services. And what we've found in Idaho is the exact opposite is true. It's their contributions of that immigrant labor force that we all get to stand on the shoulders of. If you look in our industry, predominantly the refugees have gone to work in the food processing side of the equation. So where you develop the raw materials, whether it's milk or beef or grain, the biggest economic bang for the state's economy is if you also process that and sell it out of the process. We have to export over 90% of what we produce in our state to other markets. So the refugees filled a void in our facilities. Our unemployment rate in the Magic Valley, Twin Falls area is hovering right around 3%. This month it's less than 3%. And so they have filled that void and continue to fill that void. More recently, in the last two and a half years, the refugees have started working in directly in production agriculture. One of my former board presidents has roughly three dairy operations with about 225 employees, and 55 to 60 of those employees in the last two and a half years have become refugees. Most of those refugees are from the Burma area, but he also has some from Somalia. And so they have helped him, as long as we don't have an immigration policy that we qualify for in our state, it's helped him to continue his operations. And I don't want anybody to think who's listening that the refugees are stuck at that level. Really, quite frankly, production agriculture is a starting point, entry point into the business world, and they move up from there. You can go into multiple of our plants here that process products, and refugees from Bosnia, so this is 20 years ago, are now in management positions and moving up. So I think they have contributed greatly to our society. They add great value and diversity into a very rural community, and they're greatly appreciated. And again, thank you for everyone who has been on the phone.
Thank you very much, Bob. Thank you. Our next speaker is Jenny Yang, Vice President of Advocacy and Policy for World Relief. Jenny.
Great. Thanks so much, Ali. World Relief is a humanitarian arm of the National Association of Evangelicals, and throughout our history, we've worked with many evangelical churches and communities to welcome refugees and other immigrants. On Friday, we were really dismayed at the issuance of the executive order by President Trump on several grounds. Firstly, we're really concerned that the executive order suspends the refugee resettlement program for 120 days. Secondly, we were concerned that the executive order permanently bans Syrian refugees for an indefinite period of time from the resettlement process. And thirdly, we believe that the executive order fundamentally changes the refugee resettlement program from one based on vulnerability to one based on preferences based on religion. I think over the past several years, we have worked with the U.S. government to ensure that this program is as secure as possible, and we know that refugees go through some of the most rigorous vetting of any immigrant to come into the United States. And so we believe while the government has a role to play in ensuring that our country remains safe, we don't believe that this 120-day suspension is merited given the fact that the program has been successfully admitting refugees without significant national security risk for the past 35 years. As an evangelical organization, we've gotten several feedback from individuals saying that the ban is only temporary, but at the same time, we believe that the executive order actually fundamentally alters the program. And when we talk about it being temporary, we don't consider how many families would be affected by this suspension. At World Relief, over about 70% of our cases are family reunification cases, which means that many of the refugees who are already in the United States have to wait for a period of at least 3 months in order to be reunited with their families. We know that for refugees in particular, that this causes undue hardship for them, and it actually puts their family members in more precarious situations overseas when they know that they can't come into the United States. We've asked the administration to consider shortening the suspension of the program. We've also asked the administration to reconsider the permanent, the ban on Syrian refugees. We're aware that there is a Syrian Christian that actually tried to come in through Philadelphia and was turned back at the airport because of this ban, and we're really concerned about that. We also want to make sure that any vetting which happens to improve the resettlement process does so to actually improve how the process works instead of adding additional bureaucracies that would actually make the program less efficient. So with that, I think we actually at World Relief have been working with We Welcome Refugees, which is a national campaign, and we've already collected over 19,000 signatures onto a pledge expressing solidarity with refugees. We also released a statement on Sunday with the National Association of Evangelicals, World Vision, the National Hispanic Christian Leadership Conference, and others expressing our concerns about the refugee executive order, and we will continue to speak out with our ongoing concerns.
Thank you. Thank you, Jenny. Last speaker, Fatic Cleanup, is Galen Carey, Vice President of Government Relations for the National Association of evangelicals. Galen.
Thank you, Ali, and good morning, everyone. Since 1980, more than 3 million refugees have been resettled in the United States, many of them with help from churches and volunteers who have helped them get settled, find jobs, as we've already heard, and contribute. During that time, zero Americans have been killed by terrorists who came to the country as refugees. It's an extraordinary record, and it's thanks in large part to the very strong vetting program which exists, which carefully screens prospective refugees much more rigorously than any other entrance to the country. Evangelicals have always supported refugee resettlement. It's been a bipartisan commitment of the American people. And under the last five presidents, three Republicans, two Democrats, we've seen consistent support. The refugee program demonstrates basic American values, the dignity of human life, human rights and freedom. It's the message of the Statue of Liberty. And we're concerned that the current executive order threatens to tarnish this proud heritage. In times of fear, we have at times in our history turned away from refugees. We think of World War II when we turned away Jewish refugees, some of whom were later sent to Auschwitz, the internment of the Japanese who were already here. Ironically, doing the right thing actually keeps us safe rather than living out of our fears. Isaiah 32:17 says, "The fruit of righteousness will be peace." And when we do what is right, we actually give hope to those around the world who are working for a more peaceful and just world. When we react in fear, we send the wrong message to refugees, to the host countries that are currently overwhelmed and are thinking about closing their doors, to the persecutors who see that we don't care about what they're doing, and to other countries who are weighing how they should respond. So we call on our nation to continue our proud heritage of welcoming refugees, and in doing so, we believe we will contribute to saving lives and to making a more peaceful world. If you were drowning while at sea, you wouldn't want the Coast Guard to put a four-month pause on their rescue operations. Every day that we keep our doors closed, people's lives are at stake, and the futures for people who could come and contribute but are not able to. And we call on our nation to live up to its values and to do the right thing.
Thank you, Galen. Operator, can we queue up the lines for any questions, please?
Yes, thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute button is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for a question.
While we're waiting, Bob, could I you mentioned this a little bit, but the work in Idaho with the business community, just quickly kind of provide a picture of, you know, the broader business community. I remember seeing some local press pop up in Idaho when the issues of refugee resettlement first popped up in the state. But just give kind of a summary of how that work has gone and where it might stand now.
Sure, and thanks for that, Ali. And so what we've done in the Twin Falls area, because of some of the negative press that surrounded refugee resettlement prior to this latest administrative action, the business community got together, and it's so easy to be silent on these things, especially if you have a brand to protect. But the business community got together and looked at it and said, you know, basically we can't be quiet anymore. We can't be silent anymore. And we need to be engaged, and we need to provide, our city council leaders and the others involved with the resettlement center, some backing and basically saying we need to have some backbone ourselves. So, several different business communities from our local hospital to, the dairy industry to food processors to car dealer to the, chamber of commerce, to some of the city council members just got together and They meet about monthly, every 4 to 5 weeks, and trying to look and focus on what is the best way to be engaged and how to be engaged. I mean, it was a major step getting everybody around the table. They're extremely busy individuals, and finding the right time is always a challenge. But really looking and saying, okay, for example, in this case of what's going on now, we have a meeting coming up February 9th, and it will be front and centered on how do they need to address this. And so there, you know, it's a very diverse group. We have had requests from different businesses who heard about it, asking if they could participate because, they felt it was a blemish, on our, a great small community, that they wanted to, change that and make it a positive.
Thank you, Bob. Can we get the next question, please? Or are there any questions there?
Yes, we do have a question. We'll take our first question from Rachel Zoll. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Rachel Zoll with Associated Press. Thank you for doing this news conference. This is a question for Jenny and Galen. I wanted to ask you, I mean, we've seen an overwhelming response from evangelical leaders opposed to this executive order. But as you well know, there's always been a kind of separation, it seemed, between some folks in the churches, in the pews, what their attitude toward these things are and what the leadership attitude is towards. There seemed to be a greater openness among a lot of evangelical leaders to accepting refugees and immigrants. And I wanted to just ask you about that dynamic. What are you hearing complaints or you're hearing from people saying, hey, I wish you would stop criticizing this order because I think it's a good idea? Or what's your sense? I know, Jenny, you probably go and talk to churches a lot. What's your sense of what the mood is among sort of, I would call, average congregants or average churchgoers?
Sure. So I think since Friday afternoon when the executive order was issued, we've received an outpouring through calls and emails and actually through social media wondering what people can do to respond to the executive order. And a lot of these folks were people who actually were volunteers with refugees themselves who were really concerned that their ability to continue serving refugees was going to be significantly inhibited. So we've been the outpouring that we've received has been pretty overwhelming from people who have been really supportive. In fact, we've been reached out to by several high-level evangelical leaders wondering how they can be supportive and helpful as well. So I would say for us that most of the responses we've been getting have been overwhelmingly positive and supportive refugees and wanting to actually use their voice to say that the executive order is something they wouldn't support. And so I think from us it's been an overwhelmingly positive response.
And I just add to that, I think the more people know about the order, the more concerned they are. I mean, it's certainly there may be people who just watch a cable news show and that talks about it positively, and they may not know all the details of what it actually means. But one thing to keep in mind in evangelical churches, almost all of them, our leaders are elected by the people. Pastors are elected by congregational members, and denominational leaders are elected by the pastors and other lay leaders. So if the leaders are saying things that are opposed by their members, they wouldn't be leaders for long. So it's natural that as leaders have access to more information, they may be quicker to express their concern about what this actually means for people and especially those whose lives are in danger. But I think our people, the more they know about this, the more they also will share the same concern.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Rachel. Can we get the next question, please?
And we'll take our next question from Mary McGinnis.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for doing this call. I believe, Jenny Yang, you addressed the temporary ban and how it might affect the program. I believe you said that it would fundamentally alter the program. Could you explain that in more detail, please?
Sure. And so when I talk about the fundamentally altering of the program, I'm not just referring to the suspension. I'm actually referring to the executive order as a whole. And the reason I say that is because during the 120-day ban, There's going to be changes to the vetting process, which is something that we've expressed concerns about because we believe the vetting currently has worked and it's led to the success of the refugee resettlement program and refugees coming and being law-abiding, contributing members of our society. But there's other parts of the executive order. For example, the complete banning of Syrian refugees I think is significant because the Syrian refugees have made up one of the top five nationalities that have come through the refugee program, and now they're not going to be able to come anymore under the executive order. The executive order also provides a preference for religious minorities, and it's really unclear to us what that exactly means. We know that Christian refugees in a lot of places around the world are religious minorities, and we believe there was an intended effect of helping those individuals. But at the same time, it's unclear as to how that's going to be applied in the future because while in certain cases refugees from religious minority groups have been specially designated and resettled, that hasn't been the fundamental reason for why refugees are selected for resettlement. It's always been based on vulnerability. And so I think that fundamentally changes the purpose of the resettlement program, at least in under the new executive order.
And I would add that it's quite possible that some possible extreme vetting measures that might be proposed could actually backfire. We've seen this in the past, for example, when the material support issue was added after 9/11. And so many genuine refugees have been left out of our program because of a faulty interpretation of what it means to support terrorism when people have actually been victims of terrorism. And so we certainly want our government to do due diligence, but we want them to do it in an intelligent way and to bear in mind that real lives are at stake.
Thanks, Gail. Thanks, Jenny. And thanks, Mary, for the question. Are there other questions?
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question today, it is star one. We'll pause for just a moment.
Chief Acevedo, while we're waiting, any perspective on these questions from your end?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think I'm the only person on the call that's actually a refugee. I'm a political refugee that came over from Cuba. And my analysis is this. It would have been tragic for my family that had we been painted with some broad brush because Cubans were hijacking planes and, you know, Omega 7 was blowing things up and Alpha 66, these groups, that we would have all been painted with this broad brush. I wouldn't be sitting here today as the police chief in the fourth largest city. And the other thing is, in terms of interior enforcement, no one's going to argue that we should do everything we can to identify hardened criminals, violent criminals that are undocumented, remove them from the United States. But when we start talking about these sanctuary cities and all these other nonsensical political debates that start instilling fear in the hearts of immigrants that but for their immigration status are productive members of our community and actually are full partners in our community because we have worked in terms of building trust, and they come forward and are not afraid to report the kid that's being kidnapped by the pedophile. That nanny's not afraid to call 911. When we start trying to broaden the mission of state, county, and local to become ICE agents, that's not in our bandwidth. We don't have the resources. We don't have the capability. We don't have the expertise. But more importantly, it's counterproductive to the safety of the people that we're served to protect. You know, documented and undocumented, refugee or born in this country, we have to have a razor-sharp focus, American police officers, on safety. We're the experts in that area, and we're just hopeful and urging this administration to do what other administrations have done and come together with us to forge a policy that's a win-win for the American people, and it actually enhances the safety of our country instead of hampers it. Because right now, I think we're heading in the wrong direction.
Thank you, Chief. And then do we have another question, Operator?
Yes, we do have a question. We have a question from Sam Smith. Please go ahead.
Hello, this is Sam Smith. I'm with the Christian Post. Jenny, I guess a question for Jenny. She had mentioned that there was a petition that was going around started by World Relief, and I was wondering if she could just give a little bit of information on that petition, where people can find it, where they can sign up to support it, and when it was started.
Sure. So the petition that we circulated is with We Welcome Refugees. So if you go to wewelcomerefugees.com, the petition is there. Actually, it's wewelcomerefugees.com/solidarity. But if you look on our main website, there's a link that says Stand in Solidarity with Refugees. If you click on that link, it has a little over 19,000 signatures. We launched the petition at the end of last year, and we wanted people to sign on pretty much on an ongoing basis. And I would say over the past week or so is when we've seen a significant increase in the number of people who have signed on. So we're encouraging people to continue to sign a petition, and we're also using it as a vehicle to contact them when additional actions are needed.
Great. Thank you, Jenny. Any other questions, operator?
There are no further questions at this time.
Great. Well, I want to thank press for jumping on the line. We will be sending out a release shortly, and, of course, if you would like to follow up with any of the speakers and you need to get in contact with them, reach out to them directly, or feel free to give us a call or shoot us an email. I want to thank Chief Acevedo from Houston, Bob Narabout with the Idaho Dairymen's Association, Jenny Yang with World Relief, and then Galen Carey with the National Association of Evangelicals. Thank you very much, everybody, and hope you have a great day. Take care.
And that concludes today's presentation. We thank you all for your participation, and you may now disconnect.